It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Robin, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 18th day of January 2022. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes any old time you'd like. Mostly we hang out there during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And it's also a handy place to go to find the podcast on all of your favorite podcasting platforms. Also there, you'll find the interface for helping to keep independent, liberal, progressive broadcasting on the air. Hi, I'm Robin, and it actually, they got the roads clear enough so that I could go for shot day today. And I feel decidedly better as a result. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. The first thing, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different as a consequence. We send out thanks today to our 18th day of the month subscribers. Thank you so very kindly indeed to Charlene in Rogues Island. And thank you to our dear friend Joy in Ann Arbor. Thank you to Grace. Thank you so kindly to our dear friend across the far Pacific. You know who you are. Thank you very kindly for being part of what keeps all of this going, each and every one of you, Patreon subscribers, PayPal subscribers, a la carte contributors. Thank you as well to Charlene in Rogues Island for having. I'm about to misspeak. No, that's thank you to Max. Thank you to Max. Thank you, Max, for jumping in on the challenge yesterday evening. We met Rico's MLK Day challenge. Thank you, Rico, for making it. And so we find ourselves today with only $580 to go to finish up this far into the month of January, and hopefully we'll knock some of that out so it won't be a humongous total come prayer meeting Wednesday or thorn in the side Thursday or Friday on the front porch. So if you want to help out, the PayPal interface is right there on the main page at headon.live. And, of course, I would be remiss if I did not note that if you pop into the chat room right now, well, you will be greeted by early arrivers. And let me turn off the sound effect. It comes back on and comes back. Always comes back on. I don't know. But you'll be greeted by early arrivers Squeaky and Stockton Larry, I think. Let me refresh that, make sure I know what I'm talking about. Yeah, Squeaky and Stockton Larry are there, and you'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave, and he is capably assisted by his longtime companion, pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. So I think we're set. We're ready to go. We're good. That having been said, it being Thorn in the Side, or Titanic Tuesday. Yeah, it being Titanic Tuesday, we've got lots of Titanic intellect to expose or to examine as we... Steve! as we make our way through the program this evening. And I'd like to pick up where we left off yesterday insofar as we were cataloging how people behaved like, Republicans yesterday, insofar as they didn't do a great job, Republicans, that is. And they never do. It doesn't matter what year it is. Republicans never do anything resembling a convincing job noting the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. federal holiday. And so, you know, yesterday we had Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and K-Mac, the man who would be speaker, and Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs lady in Arizona, who's raised $2.5 million off the backs of the Rubes. And, I found out too late about little Marco Rubio. Yes. He, too, screwed up yesterday. Eugene Scott over at the Washington Post said, I'm bracing myself for a slew of MLK quotes Monday from folks who have spent nearly every other day for the past year fighting against critical race theory. And bang, there it was. Mm-hmm. So, tweeting yesterday, Marco Rubio said, when the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. Dr. Martin Luther King, 1963. That, of course, comes from the only remarks that Republicans have ever been aware of Dr. King uttering, namely the I Have a Dream speech of 1963 in Washington, D.C. That wasn't all there was to it. The next line of the speech says, this note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And Jamel Bowie took note of that at the New York Times. It's obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note. You don't remember the promissory note that he mentioned that Marco Rubio quoted? Insofar as our citizens of color are concerned, instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given its colored people a bad check, a check that has come back and marked insufficient funds. But, you know, there will be no consequences for Marco Rubio, just like no consequences for Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. It was kind of pleasant, though, to see that, who was it here? I had it a moment ago. Somebody referred to Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, as a monumental jerk or something like that. I'll run across it at some point in time. That's just a matter of catching up. Now, something that I mentioned in the past week or so, I've asked the question as to whether Herschel Walker, who seems to be the only one getting any mention of pursuing the Republican nomination for Senate in Georgia to oppose Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock, I mentioned that he's such a wackadoodle that you can't help wondering if he's a stalking horse for a more serious candidate. Well, I think we may have our answer. And once again, if you are a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation, and to be a member, all you got to do is show up, listen to the program, wherever and whenever you want. Agriculture Commissioner of Georgia, Gary Black, has put a shot across Herschel's bow. Because the Atlanta Journal-Constitution in today's paper said, a review of Senate candidate Herschel Walker's Instagram account shows he follows several accounts with links to racy material. And by racy, the Journal-Constitution didn't mean having to do with race or racism or racial issues. No, by racy, the Journal-Constitution was trying to politely say that Herschel follows some porn accounts. One of the accounts has a name, the Journal went on, Journal Constitution. One of the accounts has a name not suitable for a family newsletter. Several others also have accounts on OnlyFans, a social media platform popular with porn stars. Now, a dude by the name of Scott Paradise. Really? I haven't heard of anybody last name Paradise since Sal Paradise in one of the Kerouac novels. Which, of course, wasn't a real name. But Sal Paradise said when the Journal Constitution called and said, does Herschel like porn stars? Maybe kind of. Scott Paradise said, well, that's just stupid. He follows or is followed by tens of thousands of people. No, not really. He's only following 988 accounts on Instagram. This, however, led Gary Black, the Commissioner of Agriculture in the state of Georgia, stand to say, stalking and domestic abuse are disqualifying by themselves, but a porn addiction would be a significant third strike. That's just handing the Senate to the Democrats. That was his spokescreep, Dan McLaughlin, Gary Black's. While personally sad, it's definitely conduct unbecoming of a candidate for elected office. Now, I wonder if before they said that, I wonder if maybe Gary Black might have scrubbed his accounts. I don't know. It's possible. Well, I mean, you know how it is when you're a Republican. But for Gary Black to complain like that is a bit like the pot calling the kettle black, because if you're a Republican now, it's okay to follow porn stars on social media. It's okay to, stalking and domestic abuse. It's okay to do those things, too, because their God Emperor did them. Or allegedly did them, or is credibly accused of doing them, in addition to being credibly accused by over two dozen women of engaging in sexual abuse or sexual assault. Yeah. There's no bottom in Republican politics anymore. I mean, Gary Black can hoot and bark and grunt and holler and scream and moan and generally carry on, but it don't matter. Because that's who Maggot Nation is now. Don't you remember with the maggots that went to the maggot rally back in, what was it, 2016? I don't know. Maybe it was later on. Maybe it was 2020. It went to the rally, and the one woman had a T-shirt that said, he can grab me by the pussy anytime he wants to. Or all the maggots that have been photographed wearing T-shirts say, fuck your feelings. Remember those? Yeah, those weren't secret Antifa members or secret Black Lives Matter protesters out there trying to make the maggots look bad. You don't have to try to make the maggots look bad. They just look bad all by themselves. Well, I mean, I think if there was an inquiry, we'd find out not much. Brother Deacon Asa says, what's the matter with a senator watching porn every once in a while, you damn prude? Because it came with laughing emojis. Look, what a person does in the privacy of their home and the privacy of their computer is entirely their business. As long as everybody was engaged in consent when it was going on, and and no farm animals were involved, or other non-farm animals, just human beings who were who were capable of consent. That's all we ask. But well, come on, hey Gary, hey Herschel, come on, let's you and him fight. And I hope it don't hurt too little. But I think this gives us an idea that maybe Herschel is not the front runner, and that maybe he's just sort of filling space for whomever might be. The thing, of course, being that Herschel does have the endorsement of course, the guy who did the pussy grabbing. The guy who said, you know, sometimes you want to be ready with a tic-tac in case somebody wants to kiss you. You know, sometimes I just have to walk up and kiss people. You know, it's just like spontaneous, and you can do that like when you're famous. Which is also what he said about grabbing women by their genitals. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, again, it's Titanic Tuesday, and I thought this fit rather nicely. Another thing worth mentioning, being something that occurred to me earlier today, and that is, you know, we have moved into that portion of the Senate theatrical piece in which they are going to argue in favor of the voting rights legislation that has been passed by the House and sent over to the Senate. And, of course, Kyrsten Sinema, oh, she supports it, and, oh, Joe Manchin supports it. Goodness me sakes alive. Oh, they support that legislation. But they don't support it enough to actually see it become law. No, because that would mean making a carve-out of the filibuster for the rights of Americans to participate in what passes for American democracy. And they're not going to do that. Mm-mm. No. They're not going to do that despite the fact that they, some individual, now I do not know the person, but some individual paid for a full-page ad in the the Charleston Gazette Mail calling Joe Manchin to account. Down at the bottom it says, paid for by a guy who mows his own grass, drives his own car, et cetera, and gave the individual's name. And just lambasted him. And then, of course, there's the fact that West Virginia native and Alabama head football coach Nick Saban has also entered this debate. He signed a letter to Joe Manchin. And by the way, they are buddies from way back. They were friends going all the way back to when Nick Saban and Joe Manchin were little boys. Letter's dated January 13th. It's signed by Nick Saban, and urges Congress, quote, to exercise its constitutional responsibility to enact laws that set national standards for the conduct of federal elections and for decisions that determine election outcomes. We strongly support urgently needed legislation that will protect both the rights of voters and the integrity of outcomes in all federal elections, and the Freedom to Vote Act effectively addressed these goals. However, there's always a trap door. Over at CNN, Caitlin Collins, another Alabamian, said that Coach Saban asked that there be a footnote included. In the letter. And she reported, I am told that he asked to include this footnote. Coach Saban is not in favor of getting rid of the filibuster in the Senate. He believes this will destroy the checks and balances we must have in our democracy. The others signing this letter take no position on this aspect of Senate politics. So that's kind of the it's kind of the Kirsten Sinema Joe Manchin approach. Oh Lord, yes, absolutely. Oh, we so support. But you know, if Mitch McConnell says we can't have it, we can't have it. And if Joe Manchin says we can't have it, we can't have it. And if Kirsten Sinema says we can't have it, we can't have it. Like I said, I watched the Denzel Washington, Francis McDormand version of Macbeth the other night. And as in my opinion, it is fantastically done. And when it, and even the lines that you know are coming are still delivered with real power, including this one. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. That's what that is, in case you were wondering. It's absolutely what that is. Yeah. Oh, and if you were wondering, no, the answer is no. There's nobody gonna shake Joe Manchin's tree until it feels like he's gonna rattle out of it. Cause see, with a letter like that, Joe can just pick up the phone and go, "Nick, it's Joe." "Well, hey, Joe." "Yeah, Nick, sorry about that national championship thing." "Oh, hell, you know, sometimes you win some, you lose some. You put your 11 against their 11, and that's why we have to play the game." "Well, I know it, Nick, I know. But you sure fought a good fight. And for the life of me, I can't figure out how you can play in a national championship, Nick, if you couldn't even win your own damn conference. It's a hell of a thing, unless you're Notre Dame." Never mind. And so, you know, Nick says, "You know, I sure do like them voting rights bill." "Oh, Nick, I do too. I think them voting rights bills are almost as awesome as my yacht and my Maserati. And I tell you what, I wish some Republicans would come along and get all bipartisan with us. You know, I'm bi, Nick. I don't know if you knew that, but I am. I'm bi. I don't do nothing if it ain't bipartisan. Lord, it's just more. It's more titillating and scintillating and exciting if it's bi. Of course, if you consider there's some independence involved in all of this, too, it might be pan. Maybe. It's kind of like a piece of wax fruit. Goddamn thing looks just like a peach until you try to get into it. And then it is definitely not peach, nor banana, nor apple, nor grape, nor plum. It's just a mouthful of wax. Yeah, it's frustrating. It really, really is. So we got that going on, but no, I actually wanted to do a little wander back in history. I wanted to sort of revisit from the dim mists of time a Republican EPA administrator. I got a reason for this. I don't just do things. Ronald Reagan, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, the greasy-headed B-movie actor, Well, he hadn't been president for very long back in 1981. Fresh off the warm thrill of confusion, that space cadet glow that he inspired in his in the people who voted for him and grunted and epistolated all about how I didn't leave the Democrat Party. Democrat Party left me. And that's why I voted for Ronald Reagan. And I guess it's true because the Democratic Party left them when they refused to stop being Klan sympathizers and sympathizers with the white citizens' councils and some such as that. That's why they got that aforementioned warm thrill of confusion, that space cadet glow, when he stood there at the Neshoba County Fairgrounds in Philadelphia, Mississippi, and said, well, you know, states' rights. We got to have states' rights, Mommy. Ooh-wee! And them Southerners got a real, real tingle. Yeah. Because they knew what it meant. And so once he got into office, after the October surprise, after fucking over the entire United States of America, including but not limited to the American hostages in Tehran, well, he had to appoint an EPA administrator, and he appointed his first EPA administrator, and what a doozy. As EPA administrator, there would be brutal budget cuts. Career EPA employees were like, what the fuck? And all of a sudden, the EPA stopped filing cases against polluters who were poisoning and killing people. And then came the Superfund cleanup program, mismanaged as much as it went in full as rife with grift and graft and waste and corruption as any other Republican undertaking, and perhaps more. We're talking, of course, about Ann Gorsuch. Yeah. And she found herself in contempt of Congress somewhere along the way. There's a lengthy piece over at the Washington Post about the whole sordid affair. Back when Gorsuch was being nominated. You've heard Steve in New York saying from time to time they're coming after Chevron. Chevron versus NRDC, Natural Resources Defense Council. Well, Neil Gorsuch hates that. He thinks it might be beneficial if this, quote, Goliath of modern administrative law were to fall. We managed to live with the administrative state before Chevron. We could do it again. Put simply, it seems to me that in a world without Chevron, very little would change, except perhaps the most important things. Well, I mention Ann Gorsuch, don't know. I mention her because apparently she was a really awful public servant, and the apple didn't fall far from the tree. Back then, the Washington Post wrote, she wore fur coats, smoked two packs of Marlboros a day. Her government-issued car got about 15 miles a gallon. She could charm opponents, but she also didn't shy away from political combat. Denver Post once wrote, she could kick a bear to death with her bare feet. What a delightful recommendation. Well, like I said, she passed it all on to her boy. And eventually, Reagan canned her, asking her to resign. She pissed and moaned about it back in 1986, Ann Gorsuch did. She said, when congressional criticism about the EPA began to touch the presidency, Mr. Reagan solved his problem by jettisoning me and my people, people whose only crime was loyal service, following orders. I was not the first to receive his special brand of benevolent neglect, a form of conveniently looking the other way while his staff continues to do some very dirty work. Yeah. Well, I mention all of this because for no particular decent reason, Ann's boy Neil is in the news for things that don't necessarily have to do with the law. We've seen on numerous occasions now the fact that this little fucker won't wear a mask. Now, I'm sorry, man. You know, if you want to be treated with deference and respect, you have to behave with some. As far as I'm concerned, he's a little fucker. He won't wear a mask when the Supreme Court is in session and on the bench. And that means that Justice Sonia Sotomayor cannot participate in the hearings in person. And it does matter. It very definitely does matter. I tend to think of him as a jackass, but, you know, perhaps Professor Spicoli might have a more nuanced take.
You dick!
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So, he won't wear a mask. That means Justice Sotomayor can't come to work, can't actually sit at the bench of the Supreme Court during oral arguments. And according to NPR, the Chief Justice, old balls and strikes John Roberts, even went so far as to ask Neil Gorsuch, Ann's boy, to please wear a mask on the bench. And, well, we don't know what the direct quote was, but the upshot is he said, fuck her! Who gives a good goddamn? Masks don't do nothing. And of course, he participated in the life-ending decision for God knows who, but certainly they exist, of perhaps tens of thousands of Americans. When he voted, along with five other judicial maniacs from the Federalist Society, to take the authority away from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to regulate that aspect of worker safety and health in the workplace. No vaccine mandates. Nope. Because freedom. Freedom! Wolverines! And so, despite the common sense approach of Justice Stephen Breyer and Justice Elena Kagan, she said, this is a pandemic in which nearly a million people have died. It is by far the greatest public health danger this country has faced in the last century. More and more people are dying every day. And rotten ass Figam, Ann's boy Neil said, so fucking what? I ain't gonna wear no mask. And straight up told John Roberts he would not wear a mask. you really have to be a 200 proof asshole to do something like that. And one of the more interesting side notes to this is that in any other workplace in this country, a person who has been treated as Justice Sotomayor, who has diabetes and other comorbidities, such that if she got COVID-19, she would be at greater risk of hospitalization and, yes, death. Well, Justice Sotomayor, if she worked in Amalgamated Widget Corporation of America and had somebody behaving like Neil Gorsuch, Ann's boy, is behaving, well, she could sue for creating a hostile workplace. It would certainly be a colorable claim. I think you could state a prima facie case. But this needs to be borne in mind. The Supreme Court of the United States is a lawless outfit. Only one body can do something about a renegade court, or particularly a renegade justice. And that's the House of Representatives. I don't think the framers of the Constitution had it in mind when they drafted or framed the Constitution that it would be this bad. Because they made a fundamental error in thinking that the people who served this government would always be absolutely committed, first and foremost, to the people of the United States of America. And when it comes to the likes of Ann's boy Neil, nothing could be further from the truth. He put a corporation, in a dissenting opinion, bear in mind, but nonetheless, he put a corporation and their busted, broken-down truck in the middle of the deadly cold weather ahead of the life of the truck driver. That's who he is. And no one can rein them in. There is no ethical body that has the power to compel them to live by ethical rules. The same rules that apply to judges on the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals or U.S. District Courts or United States District Court magistrates don't apply to them. And in this crappy little scenario, we see the import of it. We have an associate justice of the Supreme Court who cannot come to work on the bench because one of her associate justices doesn't care if he kills her by spreading a virus to her. Reckless indifference, willful, wanton behavior, all those forms of conduct that law students learn about in their 3 years of law school and then bang on in their practice, later practice, not one of them applies to those six maniacs from the Federalist Society who sit on the bench. They are constrained only by their consciences, and if they happen not to have one of those, well, tough titty. And the only governmental body that can do a goddamn thing about it is the House of Representatives by impeaching the said justice and sending the impeachment over to the Senate of the United States. And as much good as this House majority has tried to do, I'm sure they haven't any appetite whatsoever for this. although it would be awfully nice if somebody would put a warning shot across Ann's boy Neil's bow just to remind him that he does serve, not rule, the people of the United States. So I just kind of wanted to bring that up. I mean, if in fact, being a Trump appointee, Ann's boy Neil decided to grab one of the female members of the court by... couldn't do anything about that either. Not a damned thing. I mean, what if Justice... what if Justice Sotomayor was to go to the Capitol Police and say, you know, he's endangering my life, he won't wear a mask? Well, well, Your Honor, that sucks for you. Maybe you should get Congress to impeach him. This is part and parcel of why it is that I say that our attempts at democracy have always been, say it with me, aspirational, more aspirational than operational. Because it's absolutely true. Oh, and we'll move on from there, but this being Titanic Tuesday and all, something else that I mentioned recently. You know, last week, on a hot mic, Dr. Fauci was heard to exclaim of Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas, "What a moron." And I said back then, he will fundraise off of it and rake in cash hand over fist. And lo and behold, now Roger Marshall has done exactly that. He's trying to fundraise off of the fact that an individual vastly more intelligent than he referred to him as a moron. And so Roger Marshall's fundraising website has a shirt on it with a picture of Dr. Fauci, and underneath it, in quotation marks, "moron." And he's selling it for $29, Roger Marshall is. "Fauci called Senator Marshall a moron when he caught him flat-footed. Send Fauci a message by getting your own moron t-shirt. 100% cotton, pre-shrunk, unisex fit." Really? You good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican? Unisex! We can't have none of that. But no, it's really and for true. Because there, you know, there's no decency. Politics in America, who was the Massachusetts politician who said politics ain't beanbag, meaning this is serious and you can get your nose bloodied in it? Yeah. Well, it is rough, and it has ever been rough and tumble in this country. But here we find, as we have so often found in the last, well, God, where do you go back to on this? Do you go back to John McCain's black baby? Do you go back, where? Willie Horton, perhaps? But this is the kind of thing that proves that Republicans they always put politics and party ahead of anything resembling civics, civic pride, anything like that. And of course, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is fundraising for All He's Worth off of getting hided by Dr. Fauci as well. Yeah, oh, by the way, going back to the previous, Dave number 11 says, "Hear, hear, there's no way a national champion can come from a divisional loser." Signed, the Raiders, Broncos, Ravens, Steelers, Packers, Buccaneers, Marlins, Angels, Giants, Red Sox, Cardinals, Nationals, Warriors, et al. Right, all of which are professional sports operations. I am talking specifically about college football. It just makes no sense to me. And I would say it, like I said, this isn't an Alabama thing. I would say it about anybody. It makes no sense. Unless we simply say that the playoffs are an entirely separate season and nobody and has no bearing on the regular season, in which case, why play it? Just makes no sense. Awful. Matt in San Francisco says, "How awful you must be if the criminal Reagan kicked you to the curb." Oh, and Ann was, and you heard the quote. Oh, she was pissed. She was downright scorned. And she had her some fury. '95. Finley Peter Dunn used it for Mr. Dooley. I'm sorry, it's a fictional character, Mr. Dooley. Finley Peter Dunn. I thought it was some Massachusetts politician, but no, he's the one who came up with the phrase, "Politics ain't beanbag." Thanks, Ralph. Ralph serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Committee this evening. And so there's a caucus meeting of the Democrats in the Senate, probably taking place even as we speak. And they're going to have the first roll call votes on the voting rights bills tomorrow. And then the Republicans will filibuster the bills. They will do so. They will do so because there will not be 60 votes in favor. They will do so without actually having to filibuster. They're not going to have to stand there and read the Bible or invite Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, to come up and read Green Eggs and Ham. They're just going to say they're going to filibuster, and that's it. Because that's how the stylized rules of Senate procedure have evolved. It is form over substance. And, of course, once they filibuster the bills, then Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema will fuck us. But the one thing the Democrats have decided to do is make Joe Manchin and make Kyrsten Sinema say no out loud. Not too awfully long back, Joe said, "I've never changed my mind on the filibuster." Largely because there's not a lot of mind to change there. And of course, among all the people who, for whom there is no love lost in the Senate of the United States, Joe Manchin despises the very ground that Bernie Sanders walks on and the air he breathes. And there's no love lost in the other direction either. He was asked, Senator Sanders was earlier, if he'd be open to supporting primary challengers to senators who oppose filibuster reform. Bernie said, well, yeah. Theoretically, he should be open to supporting challengers to all 50 Republican senators, one would hope. Because 50 is greater than 2. I know my ciphering skills are often left somewhat wanting. But he might very well come in and support a primary challenge in 2024 for both of those, both Sinema and Manchin. One hopes the primary challenger will actually have something resembling a fighting chance. Now, I know it's very popular to say that that the Democrats are terrible at messaging, but I do like the fact that members of the Democratic caucus in the Senate are talking about the filibuster carve out for voting rights. They're, you know, whether it be a talking filibuster or a simple majority threshold, they're calling it restoration, restoring the Senate to its former semblance of sanity. Meanwhile, Manchin said to reporters just before going into the caucus meeting, "There's never been a simple majority vote to get off of debate. No, we just carve out and get rid of the filibuster for things that we decide it's worth getting rid of it for." And he participated in that, like, you know, the debt ceiling. Oh, but there we go. There go them big old primate brains again. And Emily's List is now saying that if Kyrsten Sinema is not interested in filibuster reform, that, well, Emily's List will be unable to endorse her going forward. In a new statement, Emily's List made where they stand pretty damn clear. "Today, as the Senate debates vital legislation on voting rights, Emily's List President LaFonza Butler released the following statement. Emily's List was founded to elect Democratic pro-choice women. We know that representation matters, as does the critical work of those women do to protect abortion rights everywhere, from state houses to city halls to the halls of Congress. Our mission can only be realized when everyone has the freedom to have their voice heard safely and freely at the ballot box. Ongoing Republican efforts at voter suppression don't just undermine our mission, but the very democratic ideals that should be at the center of our government. Protecting the right to vote is fundamental to our work and to our electoral system. We are grateful for all of our endorsed candidates who continue to fight hard to protect these rights." Oh, that's an interesting little dependent clause there, isn't it? Grateful for all of our endorsed candidates who continue to fight hard. The continue to fight hard part, that's not a dependent clause. "Emily's List is laser-focused on the 2022 elections, holding the House and Senate, electing governors and state legislators, understanding that access to the ballot box and confidence in election results are critical to our work and our country. We've joined with many others to impress upon Senator Sinema the importance of the pending voting rights legislation in the Senate. So far, those concerns have not been addressed. We've not endorsed or contributed to Senator Sinema since her election in 2018. Right now, Senator Sinema's decision to reject the voices of allies, partners, and constituents who believe the importance of voting rights outweighs that of an arcane process means she will find herself standing alone in the next election. Electing Democratic pro-choice women is not possible without free and fair elections. Protecting the right to choose is not possible without access to the ballot box. So we want to make it clear, if Senator Sinema cannot support a path forward for the passage of this legislation, we believe she undermines the foundations of our democracy, her own path to victory, and also the mission of Emily's List, and we will be unable to endorse her moving forward. We are at an inflection point in the fight for voting rights and reproductive freedom, and Democrats must stand together to protect those critical rights. Emily's List is proud to stand with Democratic pro-choice women doing that work today and every day." Good for them. Good for them. As one of those Democratic pro-choice women, good for them. But one thing to bear in mind, and I'm sure folks like Billable Rick and Darlene and Steve, other members of this community who have had a cup of coffee or more in some hallowed hall of a law school, something they will have considered is probably the following. Let's dare to dream for a moment, shall we? Let's think for a moment about that great getting up morning when Senator Sinema repents of the evil of her ways, and Senator Manchin likewise repents of the evil of his ways and supports an end to the filibuster in matters of voting rights. Now let's speed the swirling scene along and watch as the newly passed bill leaves Capitol Hill and heads for the White House on the desk of President Joseph Robinette Biden, eagerly waiting at the resolute desk in the Oval Office, with a cadre of supporters standing around him as he gets out his bill signing pens and signs that those voting rights bills into law, complete with their effective date and everything. Well, you have to be able to send your mind in multiple directions at once, because even as that is signed, some godforsaken pettifogger from, oh, I don't know, the Heritage Foundation, or perhaps the Republican caucus itself, some aggrieved Republican Secretary of State in godforsaken Texas or Alabama or Mississippi Stan or West by God Manchinia, will already be standing there at the clerk's office in the federal court building in D.C., ready with summons and complaint, case information sheet, and most importantly, a petition for temporary injunction against any and all part of the law going into effect. And before you can say Jim Crow 2.0, all that effort will be enjoined. It will be held in abeyance. It will be kiboshed, pending a temporary hearing and then pending a full hearing. If any of the legal team of the Horn Family Community Congregation are listening, please feel free to let me know if I've got that one wrong. Because I'm pretty sure I don't. This is not a reason not to do it. But it might very well, because, you know, some of the rhetoric surrounding all of this is we've got to do this now so as to stop what the Republicans plan to do in terms of voter suppression in 2022 and 2024. I can't help but think that if it were to be passed and enjoined, it would, even temporarily enjoined, that temporary injunction would stand until such time as the Supreme Court of the United States and those six wild-eyed maniac radicals from the Federalist Society could get their grubby mitts on it and tear it all to pieces. Argument? Disagreement? Stephen New York wants to know, temporary restraining order, what's the injury leading to standing? What was the injury leading to standing in Bush v. Gore? Yeah. The injury would be to states' rights, to the rights of the several states to keep the wrong coloreds from voting when clearly they had a vested interest in not doing it? And John Roberts has already long since declared the Jubilee morning in which there is no longer any such thing as racism in the United States. I know, Jack, I know. Jack in Shreveport says, my legal opinion, you're just a ray of freaking sunshine, aren't you? Yes, I am. Absolutely am, Jack. You think it's bad hearing it. Imagine thinking it. That stings. But I can't imagine that it wouldn't be. Constitutionality and all. Principles of federalism. States' rights. I have no doubt, frankly, that half the homework has already been done. Don't you? I mean, you don't wait around. This is war of a sort. And you don't wait to unlimber the artillery until after the shooting starts. So, yeah, I am Robin Kincaid, a little ray of sunshine. But at least we can see into the future a little bit. And I hope that has some degree of value. And I mentioned we were talking about Ann's boy Neil. He sure does know where his bread's buttered, and he knows who he's there to serve. And brethren and sistren and non-binary siblings, it ain't us. The Supreme Court recently refused to hear a case in which the city of Fredericksburg, Virginia, declined to give a property tax exemption for two of the ministers of a particular church. I know this could just as easily go into the stack for tomorrow, but there may be too much religious insanity by tomorrow to even fit this one in. What was before the court was the New Life in Christ Church, and they went and bought themselves a house in Fredericksburg. And they were going to put up a couple of youth ministers there. Lord God, that should give you a case of the creeping horrors just when you think about the number of youth ministers out there who have been caught ministering, I guess, with their pants down, one way of putting it. Seems like it's always the youth minister. Wasn't Josh Duggar a youth minister? Never mind. The two youth ministers were going to youth minister to college students. And the Constitution of the State of Virginia, I'm sorry, Commonwealth of Virginia, no sooner was he sworn into office than Glenn Youngkin went to war with science and common sense. More on that in a minute. Well, the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Virginia says that tax exemptions can be given by the Commonwealth to churches, their actual physical church spaces, as well as the place where the minister lives. The minister, also known as a parsonage. There's another statute that says the exemption does in fact apply to the residence of the minister of the church. That's a quote. That's all that strict constructionist bullshit and originalism linguistic fundamentalism or whatever these wild-eyed maniacs are calling it these days. Well, the city of Fredericksburg took one look and said that the couple of youth ministers of the New Life in Christ Church, it didn't qualify. Naturally, the church, the New Life in Christ Church, understanding as they did that the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States serves as little more than a life support system for the religion industry anymore, well, they sued. And they lost in the trial court, and they lost in the appellate court. And so eventually they tried to find their way up to the Supreme Court, where lo and behold, mirabile dictu, the Supreme Court said, shut the fuck up. Go away. Darken not our door again. Well, this didn't sit well with Ann's boy, Neil. Ann's boy, Neil, who can't even engage in the common courtesy of putting on a mask to keep his fellow justice from perhaps catching a virus and dying. Oh, but he's hot. The First Amendment does not permit bureaucrats or judges to subject religious views to verification. The framers of our Constitution were acutely aware how governments in Europe had sought to control and manipulate religious practices and churches. They resolved that America would be different. Now, at no point in time did the city of Fredericksburg delve into, as Ann's boy Neil said, the internal affairs of the church. In point of fact, the city of Fredericksburg said, hell, you can make ministers out of everybody in the congregation. But the fact of the matter is, the plain language of the statute says, the minister of the church. In other words, had they wanted to name these two youth ministers as the minister of the church, they could have booted their head minister out on his ass, made that little house in Fredericksburg the parsonage, and everything would have been groovy. Because if you think about it for a minute, this is the camel's nose under the tent, and once the camel's nose is under, the hump ain't far behind. And so you could have churches setting up parsonages, and maybe they could have a coffee shop and name the manager of the coffee shop a minister, and give him a bedroom in the back of the coffee shop, and go into the barista business. And pay not a dime's tax on it. Now, some states do stupid shit like that. Let churches set up a gym with, weight machines and whatnot. And call it a part of the church. Call it a ministry of the church. Bowling alleys, basketball courts, tennis courts, swimming pools, movie stars. Yeah. And lawyers for the city of Fredericksburg said it was never about delving into ecclesiastical pursuits or abridging the church's right to exercise its religion. It's about the authority of a court to make a determination of relevant facts based on the evidence when adjudicating a church's application for Virginia's tax exemption. But that doesn't matter to Ann's boy, Neil. Ann's boy, Neil, saw a religious organization in the caption and style of the case and knew immediately that the religious organization should win. There's another one of these before the court about a fucking flagpole in Boston. Because I guess in front of City Hall in Boston, there's a state flag, and there's a flagpole for the state flag of Massachusetts, and there's a flagpole for the American flag, and then there's a third flagpole that sometimes has the flag of the city of Boston. Other times, however, Massachusetts Save the Whale Consortium, you can go to City Hall and say, hey, could you fly our flag for a day? We'd really like that. And the city of Boston says, sure. And, you know, maybe the next day that flag comes down and another one goes up. Maybe that's one, that one's for Feed Boston's Hungry Children. It goes up. Why, I'll bet they've probably even flown a Red Sox flag or a Pats flag. But, of course, some religion industry institution always has to fuck it up for everybody else. Sorry, this is kind of turning, getting kind of Wednesday-ish. Please to forgive me, but these two dovetail together. Well, the Supreme Court decided to hear this case. And sadly, the Biden administration chimed in on behalf of the church. Now, I don't have the paperwork to hand, but the bottom line is that gospel shop went to the city of Boston and said, "Hey, we want you to fly our Christian flag for the day." Now, I don't know if you know about the Christian flag. It is not universally, little C Catholic, that is, the Christian flag. Every denomination does not agree. It's not the Christian flag, as far as I know, of the Russian Orthodox Church or the Christian flag of the Greek Orthodox Church, or certainly not the Christian flag of the Roman Catholic Church. But, on the other hand, In various denominations of floor rolling, strychnine swigging, serpent juggling, evangelical Christianity, it's a white field with a square in the corner, just like the American flag, and it's got a blue background, just like the American flag in that little square, only it's got a big old blood red cross where the American flag has 50 stars, and of course there's no 13 stripes. It's just a white field, blue square in the corner, bloody red cross on it. And they call that the Christian flag. When I was just a little closeted trans girl growing up in the Southern Baptist Church, we had to pledge allegiance to the Christian flag and for the Savior for which it stands. And so whichever gospel shop this was asked Boston to fly there, they went, nope. Mm-mm. No, that's an impermissible establishment of a religion on the part of the city of Boston. And, oh, my God, the city of Boston hates Christians. No, the fuck it doesn't. There's a lot of Christians who, seeing that flag, would have felt very damn much like, I guess my flavor is out of favor. Not to mention the Hindus and the Sikhs and the Muslims and the Jews and the animists, the Baha'i, the Buddhists, the Taoists. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's a 7-2 or an 8-1 or even a 9-0 decision saying, Boston's got to fly that damn flag. Well, in the meantime, the city of Boston simply said, well, I guess that little moment of decency's over. Because evangelical Christians are why we can't have anything nice in this country. So the Massachusetts Save the Gay Baby Whales Coalition won't be flying its flag anymore there at City Hall. Because where before Boston had never turned down a single application, now they just turn them all down. Because the whiny, petulant evangelicals had to ruin it for everybody. Hey, it gets frustrating. It does. So hopefully that's the end of the Neil Gorsuch portion of the program. Yeah, where else should we go? Oh, wait, here it is. They heard arguments today on the Boston case. By the way. And the group, this is Orwellian as hell, the group that wanted to fly the Christian flag, well, they were called Camp Constitution. There wasn't anything constitutional. They had nothing to do with the Constitution. They were about advancing the evangelical agenda. And, of course, enter Matthew Staver, the grifter from Liberty Council. You know, the same guy who lawyered so good, he got his client, Sister Clerk Kim Davis, shipped off to the Hooskow in contempt. Liberty Council. They represent Camp Constitution. He said, what's unusual about this case that's hard for Boston to overcome is that they called it a public forum, and they said it was open for all applicants, and then after 12 years of approving these applications with no denials, they censor one. And so the argument's going to boil down to whether it is a public forum, in which case government can't say anything about who's doing the speaking. You know, basically you set up a soapbox on the Boston Common, and anybody who wants to can stand on that. And I mean, you can still graze your cattle on the Boston Common, I think, by law. Because the idea of the Boston Common goes back to the idea of a commonwealth and the rather high-minded principles of the land-stealing white people who came over here to displace a bunch of natives and set up a shining city on a hill. Or is it a form of government speech whereby the city government of Boston implicitly is endorsing the various groups that have asked to be represented there? And so, like I said, they argued it today. I wouldn't give this thing a snowball's chance in the deepest depths of perdition. And so that little moment of decency where cities would happily fly flags for civic-minded organizations will probably go the way of all flesh. Oh, well. We know they want a theocracy, Ann's boy Neil wants a theocracy. Clarence pubes on the Coke can slappy. Thomas, credibly accused sexual assaulter and abuser, wants a theocracy. Lord knows, Brat Kavanaugh, who likes beer, also likes theocracy. So does Sammy Bad Breath Alito, and so does Amy COVID Barrett, Justice Handmaid. Don't look for this case to end the way that the framers of the Constitution would have ended it. Yet, not to get all originalist or anything, but those folks were pretty solid on the idea that religion had no place in government. If no religion is in government, then all religions are free. But if one religion gets its mitts on government, then no religions are free, except the one being favored by government. Told you it might be a busy Titanic Tuesday. Oh, and sort of dovetailing with Ann's boy Neil not wanting to wear a mask. Quick little check-in with 55-year-old Scott Quiner. He got the Rona, and they took him to Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids, Minnesota. Don't know where this place is, but he did what so many victims of COVID-19 who have been unvaccinated. He declined quickly. Quickly got to low oxygen levels. Since that time has shown few, if any, signs of improvement. And so, recognizing he was not going to get better, the hospital told the family of Scott Quiner, 55 and unvaccinated, that they were going to take him off the vent. Well, Scott's wife, Ann, went a running to the Anoka County Court and filed suit to keep the hospital from taking him off the vent. And one Judge Jennifer Stanfield gave the Quiner family what they wanted, namely, keep him on the vent. And so, with their victory in hand, they immediately took him out of Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids and flew him, oh, come on, you know where, to Texas. Marjorie Holston, who is the pettifogger for the Quiner family, said, Scott is now in a hospital in Texas getting critical care. The doctor said Scott was the most undernourished patient he's ever seen. The last update I got was yesterday afternoon after some tests had been run. All organs are working except the lungs. Listen, you noble pleader. I know this may come as a surprise to you, but it doesn't matter if every organ in your body is running on the goddamn gold standard. If your lungs are fucking shot, you're dead! You know, unless you can, I don't know, channel a member of the Cheney family and get him sent to the front of the line for a lung transplant. You know, no schadenfreude. And certainly no satisfaction, but a great deal of grief. If 55-year-old Scott Quiner had simply gone and gotten a free fucking vaccine, a couple of them, and a booster, Well, bless his heart, he wouldn't be in Texas right now with all his great functioning organs except the lungs. Oh boy, I want to tell you what. Scott Quiner's gallbladder is going great guns. I mean to tell you, his pituitary gland is something else. You ought to see Scott Quiner's pituitary gland. Woo, it's working great. Them lungs is a problem. Jesus. And you just know, this is the speculation part of the story, you just know what they took him to Texas for. They done tooken him to Texas to get him some horse paste. You know, and seeing as how all his organs is working so good, you know, I bet his sense of taste is just right on point. So they'd probably get him the apple-flavored horse paste. Well, Todd, I'm glad to know that somebody appreciated the pituitary remark. I got your pituitary right here. I wonder if he's been nominated for his Herman Cain Award yet. More hand-wringing over the Herman Cain Award over at Reddit. I forget if it was the Washington Post or the New York Times. Somebody was doing some pearl clutching and hand wringing, hand clutching and pearl wringing. Them people over there, no, they are not making fun of them. They are not celebrating. And if you bother to read any of the goddamn threads, you'll find out people going, "Why can't these people get a goddamn vaccine?" Well, the answer is that the people that they pay attention to don't want it, are encouraging them not to get it. At age 55, I don't know, you think Scott Quiner was a Pink Shrek viewer, listener? Or at 55, does he seem more the Glenn Beckerhead type? Or maybe just a boring garden variety, everyday, run-of-the-mill viewer of Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, or Newsmuck, or Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. You tell me. I don't know. I just... breaks my heart. That poor family. That poor family. Well, let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Doesn't break anything of mine, Robin.
You done?
Hello?
Yeah, I said, are you just done with them?
I am so far beyond done. The light from done
won't reach you for a million years.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court, if they want religion in the complex there, when they start doing the fucking loaves and fishes trick in the Supreme Court cafeteria, and take a box of fish sticks and a couple of stale loaves of Mrs. Levy's Jewish rye, and feed everybody in the place, then they can have religion in the fucking Supreme Court. Let it start with the cafeteria. Yay, verily, you motherfuckers. God damn. Well, you can tell I've hardly had...
Well, I'm sorry to... I'm sorry to have got you all wrought, but...
No, it's not...
But at least I got some company.
You're just reporting it. It's these... Jaspers that are just dumber than dog.
Oh, wait a minute. that's just for Jaspers.
Yeah.
Because I dare say it's another one of those moments that happen all the time on this program where words that are not used anywhere else in American broadcasting somehow find their way here. It's kind of like the island of misfit toys in Rudolph, you know?
That's us. That's us. I'm telling you. You know,
we're the island of disused vocabulary.
That too. We're the island where reality is more than a theory or a notion. A fanciful notion. God damn it. Are these... Well, I've answered my own question. Are these people out of their fucking
mind? I'm just curious. Did you pick up your bottle of Midori and a little bottle of vodka and some of that melon-flavored Gatorade yet?
Does it help? Can you hear it in my...
No, I mean...
Is it helping?
I was just going to recommend that you not forget the swirly straw when you do.
Yeah, and get a propeller.
A propeller beanie. Goddamn right.
Why not? And a Trump shirt. Let's make the ensemble complete. Dicker and Dicker, or Chip and Shore, or whatever fashions Carol.
Of Beverly Hills. Yeah, Dicker and Dicker of Beverly Hills. You did it twice now.
And where's Michael C. Fina and his lovely silver teacup when we need him?
Hey, get Don on the phone. Where are those pictures?
Jesus. No, here I am, a rather laid back, calm.
Oh, I've ruined it. It's only taken a decade or so, but we've completely broken you.
Oh, I'm shot to hell. Come on. You couldn't drag me back to an even-tempered, you know, rational, calm, meek and mild, you know, a sweet, merciful Jesus, meek and mild type, if you just did an entire personality transplant.
Well, you're killing out in the heartland, because Les just sent you a cowbell for yay verily, motherfucker.
This is why they'd never let me do morning radio. Because it's morning to me. It's morning in my America. And I just, until I've had two or three cups of coffee, you better be careful. I may do anything. I may say anything. And try to stop me, you know?
Oh, Jesus, this is just getting better. It's one of those situations where there's a feedback loop, and they just start replicating each other. Yeah. Todd in South Carolina stands said, And this is for you, Todd. Scott used to pass out lollipops. Now he carries a machete.
That's your sweet patoot. I do. Jeez.
Well, Scott McCoot. Oh, shit, I'm going to hell for that one.
But seriously.
Good luck if you can.
I just, you know, I get up in a calm, basal state, you know, all ready for surgery. And within 5 minutes, before I've had the first fucking sip of coffee...
There I am.
I'm back on the ledge. Not to jump, to throw those fuckers right the hell off.
Yeah, fucking cigarette butts. Oh, God. I know.
Well, there was something I was going to bring up. But you got me free associating. I just, you know, I feel like bumper cars at a carnival. Bumping into myself. Bam! Bam! You know?
Why is everybody after me today?
It's like the Tin Bear at the shooting gallery at the arcade.
Ding!
Oh, God.
I was trying to do a reasonably serious program.
Yeah, your ass
that ship sailed.
Bye, Mr. Rassi. Mr. Lincoln. Bye.
Shane, come back, Shane. Yeah. Well, Jeremy said, watch it, Scott. There's a nun out there in the wide world that has a set of erasers and a few chalkboards for you to bang out your sins on.
Oh, God, there's not enough chalk in the world, Robin. I mean, you talk about ship sailing. If I walked into a Catholic church at this point in the narrative, it would, you remember Notre Dame, the spire or whatever the hell it was on the top of that thing? There they
God, if you're under 40, this is really funny shit. You gotta catch up.
Man. Oh God. Wait a minute, let me go.
But you're not the only frustrated one out there. I just got a note from our dear sister Cynthia out in the Bay Area. She says, so I got a phone call yesterday from the dentist office informing me that my dental procedure under general anesthesia scheduled at a hospital for this Friday has been canceled by the hospital due to staffing issues. Could it be because of COVID? Hello? Get vaccinated, all you unvaccinated assholes. Now I have to wait until early March for a new date. Thanks a lot. I really wanted to get this done and over with and behind me. Sigh. Oh, honey, I know. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Can you get an eye exam to get eyeglasses anywhere? I'm afraid to call because I'm afraid that they're going to tell me no. You know, due to COVID restrictions, blah blah blah. You know, we can't be any closer than the moon from each other.
Right.
It's
yeah. It's kind of hard to use a long stick to turn that little dial this way or this way.
Which is
this way or this way?
Or this.
I always get stressed out by that.
I don't test well, you know, in scholastic terms. I don't test well. So it has colored all of my tests.
Well, I always get caught up in that thing going, hey, this way, better this way or this way? This way or this way? And I'm like, hold on, go back. I want to see this way two times back. And this is...
I don't think they're turning it.
Just fucking with you.
Yeah, they know what your eyes are from the moment you sit down, you know? You know, but anyway, I need new lenses. To talk about Cynthia, I desperately need dental work. And once again, the whole classroom is being punished because of some dipwad in the back of the room who's doing funny things with his thumb and his...
there's always one. I mean, if you want to learn the whole... If you want to learn that whole theory and adage about the weakest link, just look at this country since January 2020.
And the teacher at the head of the class can send as many notes home as he or she wants, and it is to no effect. Because where do these children get it?
It all begins in the home. It all begins in the home.
That's right. It's... You know, I ought to hang up and call back with Mr. Nice on the end of the line, because I'm starting to piss my own self off. I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't do this. The squirrels won't even come for their nuts.
Breathe.
They look at me.
Letting go now. Letting go now. Letting everything go, Scott. Breathe in and blow out the negativity. Ah, fuck. Yeah.
They look at me and they say, if we can get him up into the nest, we'll eat like kings. Oh, God.
God, I love that one.
Oh, God. So how the hell are you, Robin? Is everything all right?
I'm just a mess.
I'm just falling apart.
No, I was thrilled because I got the car out of the driveway, got all the way over, got my shot, and got back. No adventures, and got in here, sat down.
And then I called.
And then this thing just, because sometimes the programs just sort of put themselves together.
Yeah.
And when I saw this, where this one was going, it's like, oh hell, this is going to be a night, or a day, or the program.
Yet another stellar edition of Head On Radio with Robin Kincaid.
And I saw it. By the way, the January 6th committee has, among other things, subpoenaed Rudy Giuliani and some of the other pettifoggers from Trump's cabal.
Food fight.
And oh, but wait. They've also issued a subpoena for Eric the Dumber and Kimberly Gargoyle.
Did he get a coloring book edition of a subpoena?
Yeah, and the little cheap toxic crayons. Right, yeah. But they subpoenaed Kimberly Gargoyle, who was right there dancing, and it drives a net bananas. She on the day of the insurrection, she was in that big party tent while they were watching the insurrection, the coup go down. She was dancing to the DJ playing Laura Branigan's Gloria.
Jesus, God help us. Yeah.
And this is also the one who stood there in 2020 at the MAGAT National Convention and said, "The best is yet to come."
Jesus, what about when I first tuned in, you were talking about lawyers, and I use that term advisedly. Sydney Greenstreet or whatever. The lady, is she? She's they're rounding her up too. That'll be good.
And she, I hope she yells that all the way to a prison cell. But you know,
see, she ought to be talking like the actor. I think that was his name, Sidney Greenstreet, who was in the Maltese Falcon.
yes, of course. The best is yet to come.
God, help me. Why did I call? There were a couple of things as you were speaking, I was making mental notes, and I always, it's like in vanishing ink when I make a mental note anymore.
Yeah, well, that's because there's no way to make notes for the conversations that take place here. By the way, Steve in New York says, and I don't know what about, but I just laughed out loud when Scott just said that. That was at 6:42 p.m. Eastern Standard Time 3 minutes ago. Ask the court reporter to please check the transcript and see what that was. Let's see. Speaking of machetes, Jude in the Great Northwest says, a family member just last week was working when an extremely dangerous man came into the station, returned to his car, and brought out a machete, waving at a man walking by. Precarious times indeed. My best to all. God. Dear God. Oh, stay safe, you and the family. Dude, stay safe. And this, Billable Rick has responded. He says, I'm 30 minutes behind on the program, but I agree with your analysis. Assuming that the Senate carves out an exception to the filibuster for voting rights, the GOP will undoubtedly seek to obtain a judicial filibuster against those bills by seeking to enjoin enforcement of the new laws. The AFP, American Fascist Party, would probably file such a suit in district court within the conservative judicial cesspools known as the Fourth Circuit and the Fifth Circuit Courts of Appeal. Oh, I mean, they've already got the, yeah, they can forum shop. It's not even forum shopping in a state like Texas. And the new laws would probably be enjoined by the Circuit Court of Appeals, leaving us to rely on the five fascists and the baseball umpire on the Supreme Court, old balls and strikes, to overturn the injunction and save voting rights. Fat chance. He closes, Billable does, by saying, Robin, has Scotty told you lately, Robin, we're all
screwed. We're all screwed, Robin. I'll tell you, speaking of filibuster, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one of the things I was going to, I had a TV viewing tip for the Horn family. If you have TCM, tomorrow evening, 1939 Frank Capra film, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Oh dear God, they really put that on. Oh, well,
tomorrow night, and you can see a filibuster as it was actually done on that show. And I know it's, you know, Frank Capra does a lot of saccharine, sweet, hokey films about the way America ought to be. But it'll give you a rough idea of just how far afield the Republican Party has gotten. That you, did you know you can phone in a filibuster, Robin? You don't have to stand there and piss yourself?
No, you don't even have to phone it in. You can just think it. You can think filibuster, and suddenly any legislation that would actually do any good for the American people drops dead at a thought. It's like something from Dune. Oh my God, he truly is the Kwisatz Haderach. He didn't even have to. He has the voice of command, the thought of command. He can kill with a thought. He didn't even use the weirding module.
And once again, with my DJ brain doing what it does, the word filibuster makes me think of a song from the early 70s by a one-hit wonder group called Blue Swede or Blue Suede, Hooked on a Feeling. And then it starts, Ooga Jocka, Ooga.
I thought that was B.J. Thomas.
Well, the original was.
Ah.
They did a cover of it.
Hey, if you want to, that's good. That's good. You know,
I can't fight this feeling.
Deep inside of me.
Somebody, yeah. Parody people, do write me up a tune. Come on now.
Filibuster, filibuster.
Did you know that parody, musical parody, is not copyright infringement?
No, it is not. It is absolutely not. And
come on, composers out there.
You know, I wanted to make mention of something since you were talking about viewing. And through the course of the day, beginning, you know, in the dark and still of the night when my eyes open up and I start consuming data, never knowing where the conversation will take us later in the evening. By the time the day's end has come around, that space is sacrosanct. And we reserve that for
the good stuff.
For the good stuff. I mean, it ain't no documentaries, nothing. And so last night, we watched an absolutely lovely little film. We'd gotten started on it and then fell asleep the previous evening. It's directed by George Clooney. It stars Ben Affleck, Christopher Lloyd in a wonderful supporting role, and a young child actor who is just wonderful. And it's called The Tender Bar.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Oh, it was so, so good. And you know, building on, there's a trend, it certainly hasn't consumed Hollywood or anything, but there's a trend line that runs from Ted Lasso through Station 11, and now this film. And it's almost as though there are people out there making films who desperately want to give us images of people being decent.
Well, we can use that. God knows.
And I was thinking about that when you brought up Frank Capra and said some of his stuff could be saccharine. But the fact of the matter was, Frank Capra was celebrating his vision, not necessarily of what America was, but what America could be.
And in the context of his times, now Mr. Smith Goes to Washington was released in 1939. What else was going on in the country and the world? Wait a minute. Got my Harry Belafonte throat going there. Anyway, what else was going on in the world in 1939?
Well, yeah.
That might have inspired him.
Was it made or was it released?
I was released in 39.
Yeah, so it was probably made 38, 39. Yeah. And there was plenty of reason for uplifting American ideals at the time.
Yeah. Oh, as we have, and if you weren't sure then, I mean, when was the Madison Square Garden Nazi-thon? That was in...
The research department will get on that right away, I'm sure.
Here you had the old Madison Square Garden, which was not a small venue, okay? Stuffed to the rafters, with brown shirts and fucking Sieg Heilers and
yeah, various and sundry fascist scum. Probably some supporters of Benito Mussolini.
I would be
absolutely shocked if it didn't turn out that fat dead Tony Scalia's daddy was there. Maybe his daddy and his mama.
Fred Trump was holding the concession stand, or maybe he built the concession stand. But do you get what I mean?
It's yeah.
Like everything old is new again, and it was rotten and horrid and putrid back when they first ran it by us. But here we've got a so-called news situation where any crazy-ass, off-the-wall, dumbass thing that you can think of to say constitutes reality. Well, there's a recipe for success. God damn, I just started my second cup of coffee. You heard me tinkle.
I did. So. Well, no, I'm preferring to think that you were not tinkling, but yes.
But you get what I'm saying. It's like, you know, there used to be guardrails and rules, you know, norms and mores that we all kind of agreed on. Well, that's pretty much out the window, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the tender bar, what channel is that on? Because I saw a preview.
Amazon Prime, I think.
All right. Well, I will definitely add that to the list.
It's just sweet, and Ben Affleck is excellent, and the whole cast surrounding him, you know, given the setup to it, and it's based on a memoir, but given the setup to it, it could be very grim, but instead, it's really really positive.
You know, Clooney has directed before. He about 10 years ago directed and was in briefly the Edward R. Murrow story, Good Night and Good Luck, which wasn't a half bad movie at all. And I forget what else he's directed, but I think he's also done some other films.
Without a doubt.
That's why I got into showbiz, you know, because I want to direct.
Well, you know, I've got a treatment if you'd like to read it.
We all need a treatment at this point. Jeez, just hook them electrodes up and juice me up. Juice me up, Daddy. Juice me up.
And by the way, George says, Robin and Scott, no one ever remembers how dark Mr. Smith Goes to Washington was. The gangsters behind the corruption in Congress caused great terror and injury to the Boy Rangers. Gene Arthur steals the film, though. Great show. Thanks.
That's
what sets up the conflict is it's straight up battle of good and evil kind of stuff.
Well, and I guess it was a lot like our time because they didn't have TV, not in a conventional sense. They had it experimentally, but the newspapers were the thing back then, where you could like Citizen Kane, where John, what was his name? Where Mr. Kane, a thinly disguised William Randolph Hearst, owned a chain of newspapers and publishing entities that molded and shaped
American opinion.
Yeah, yeah. And what do we have now? Well, we know people don't read. They can barely string a coherent sentence together, much less read. You know, a fortune cookie is a heavy reading assignment for most of these people.
No shit.
And they don't get the irony when their fortune says, we're all screwed, Robin. It's all bullshit, and then you die. Oh, well, I'm just happy. Let's enjoy a meal. That's why they do the fortune cookie after the meal. Because who can eat being that bummed out? I can't lift a fork, you know, when things get like that.
Oh, and by the way, Tracy sent me some notes as well.
Tracy!
Saying, holy crap, I totally forgot about the Christian flag pledge. We used to say it back in the day before vacation Bible school. Trying to remember if we said it before or after the Pledge of Allegiance. My God, looking back on a bunch of black folks pledging allegiance to two flags that represent white supremacy and racism is troubling, to say the least. My people, shake my damn head. And as far as your eye exam goes, don't forget your lens is fogging up because you have to wear a mask during the exam.
Well, that too. Oh, my new masks aren't here yet, but I'm going to give a full review as soon as they arrive. And thank you again to Paul and Parts Unknown, or Parts and Paul Unknown, wherever you are, for the bonafide masks, something like that?
No, it's not, yeah, something like that, yeah. I think it was bonafidemasks.com or whatever.
Yeah, and they're very well priced.
Well, Robert in Australia reminds, see, these are the conversations we get going here, and they are, you know, they're valid because they have meaning. Mr. Smith goes to Washington. From Wikipedia, the film premiered in Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C., October 17, 1939, sponsored by the National Press Club. They invited 4,000 guests, including 45 senators. Then this. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington was attacked by the Washington press and politicians in the U.S. Congress as anti-American and pro-communist for its portrayal of corruption in the American government. It is known that Alvin W. Barkley, a Democrat and the Senate Majority Leader, called the film silly and stupid. It makes the Senate look like a bunch of crooks. It's a grotesque distortion of the Senate, as grotesque as anything ever seen. Imagine the Vice President of the United States winking at a pretty girl in the gallery in order to encourage a filibuster. He thought the film showed the Senate as the biggest aggregation of nincompoops on record.
And
art
correct.
Imitates life.
He was correct. I mean,
somebody dig up old zombie Alvin Barkley and tell him it takes one to know one.
Wasn't he vice president at some point? Or am I confusing him with someone?
And he was from Kentucky, and he was the vice president of the new United States from 1949 to 1953.
And the South shall rise again.
And wait, because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, he came from McCracker County, Kentucky. I'm sorry, McCracken County.
Well, you had it right the first time. Dumbass cracker. Anyway.
Name like Albin. You know, you just knew there had to be some white supremacy in there. I mean, that's not far from Albion, and that means white.
And there's a school in D.C. called St. Albans, but they pronounce it Albans because we have culture.
Oh, that's St. Albans. We got a St. Albans, West Virginia. And, yeah, named after a place in merry old England. Well, there's a whole bunch of Wikipedia on Alvin Barkley.
Well, anyway, the viewers, and even if you've seen it, if you can't watch it live, it's in the evening tomorrow on TCM, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Set your DVR, and even if you've seen it again, as you watch it, don't just be entertained, but sit there and say, my God, here we go again. You know?
Yeah. By the way, just some interesting trivia here. Alvin Barkley was the last vice president to preside regularly over the Senate. And he was the last vice president to identify more with the legislative than the executive branch. That according to Mark O. Hatfield and his sketch of Barkley. But then this, this is back when he was vice president. Despite the Democrats' advantage in the Senate, conservative Democrats united with the Republican minority to oppose much of Truman's agenda, most notably civil rights legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1940, wow, but God, how this program just happens. March 1949, Democratic floor leader Scott W. Lucas introduced an amendment to Senate Rule 22 to make cloture easier to achieve, hoping to end a 10-day filibuster against a civil rights bill. Conservative Republicans and Southern Democrats opposed the rule change and tried to obstruct it. Nothing freaking changes. So maybe he wasn't a white supremacist. I don't know.
Somebody on my Facebook friend, my friends list on Facebook said that, and at first I didn't like what he said, but the more I thought about it, the more I said, you know, he may have a point, because it was Martin Luther King's birthday, the observation date, yesterday, and he said, you know, America is not reflected in Martin Luther, by Martin Luther King. America, we're worse than that. Words to that effect. And we are worse than that.
Yeah.
I mean, did I ever tell you back when I had a Washington Post route, when the night after Martin Luther King was killed, going out to do my collections, you know, for the service of the paper?
Right.
The guy answered the door. I could tell you, if we were at Alexandria, Virginia, I could, the guy's probably long dead, but I could take you to the house where this happened. The porch light wasn't even on, barely a light coming through the windows. And I said, well, the people will be home. I can get paid, you know, for delivering the paper. So I knock on the door, and a little light goes on inside, and this suspicious face, half of it, from behind a lace curtain on the windows of the door. You know, some doors have windows, and some are Mac users, but that's neither here nor there. So I, you know, eyeing me suspiciously, and you hear this series of latches and locks and chains being disengaged, and he opens the door. What are you doing out tonight? Washington's burning. I said, well, that's 5 miles from here. We, you know, I came to collect for the paper.
I need to get paid.
And he opens the door and invites me in. He's got a holster on his hip with a big fat old gun on it, in it. He's got a fucking shotgun propped up against the keyboard of the piano.
Because he's ready.
This motherfucker was ready. We're gonna engage tonight. And he was a lousy tipper. I forget his name, but I know them not by their name, but by their tip or lack thereof.
Yeah.
You know, but this was the mindset. When you have frightened white people, you know, anything can happen.
Stuff goes sideways. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to go back to the idea of the application for a temporarily restraining order. Should, you know, that little hypothetical I put forward. Because Mike in Cascadia had an interesting view on it. At least if the court shut down the voting rights bills, the Supreme Court would incur the wrath of the liberal progressive Democratic majority. Whereas now, many, many, many liberal progressive Democrats are just going to be pissed at the Democrats. They didn't get their pony, and it's all Joe Biden's fault, since he couldn't do it like LBJ and get Sinema and Manchin to move. I heard that exact argument on Ian Masters' background briefing last night. A professor said that. She said that all the Democratic leadership needs to go. Like you say, Nancy Pelosi and the House have done their job. But most people probably aren't going to realize that. Ironic, McConnell said his job in the Obama terms were to make Obama a one-term president. Sinema and Manchin are doing McConnell's job now on Biden. Jesus.
Well, see, now, I don't mean to get into the Wayback Machine and take us back to 1964, I guess it was. If you ever read Roger Mudd's book, the former late CBS news reporter and later on...
Oh, he has a special place in my heart, because when I was very little, and people say, little Robin, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, everybody, all the other kids, yeah, I want to be a nurse. I want to be, you know, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a policeman. I want to be a fireman. I answered, I want to be Roger Mudd.
And good for you, because he was it's been a while since I've read it, but how many days the filibuster went on and on and on over the civil rights bill. But Roger Mudd was there filing reports for CBS radio all day on the Capitol steps, and then for CBS TV news for 70 some odd days, as I recall. And this was in the time when you needed 67 votes, as I recall, to override a filibuster, yet we got it done. This shows you the difference between then and now. And if it's within human memory, it wasn't all that long ago in the grand scheme of things. But yet, this is why we can't have nice things. Even logical and appropriate and fought over things that people have died for. The vote is the keystone of everything else that happens, or to everything else that happens. And if people are being blocked at the schoolhouse door, or the courthouse door, to exercise their fucking franchise, well, by jingo, we are all screwed if that goes through.
Amen.
And they broke fucking land speed records. This handful of states with their 34 bills and laws to ratchet down people's ability to vote. That's not a coincidence. And now they're seeding, if you will, how, you know, you seed clouds with iodide crystals or whatever to make it rain. They are seeding the lower levels that don't automatically come under any federal overview to where your election people, your election officials in these backwater places, and even not so backwater places, once the next election occurs, they will be in the catbird seat to say, well, we're not going to count that one. Well, this looks a little shady. We're not going to count that one. And there goes the ball game. That is the ball game, Robin.
Yeah.
I don't need to tell you that. You know that. But this is basically, and this is the last time we spoke, I said, this is not the time to kick back in the happiness fog of, you know, the Democrats have the House, Senate, and the White House. If we want to keep the House and the Senate and the fucking White House, we've got to be as engaged as if the election were tomorrow.
And I want to share something with you.
No, I'm not going to let you. I'm hijacking the show.
Damn you. Mike in Cascadia just shared this with me from Norm Ornstein.
Yeah.
He said, I have read Joe Manchin's statement. He quotes his predecessor, and this was, you know, he sent this tweet out, you know, barely a half an hour ago. I've read Joe Manchin's statement. He quotes his predecessor, Robert Byrd, from a 2010 hearing on the filibuster. Wrongly. Surprise! I was a witness at that hearing, talked to Byrd. After Byrd changed the rules, at least, I talked to Byrd after. Byrd changed the rules at least 9 times to get around obstruction. He was open to rules changes. Not to eliminate the filibuster, but to keep the burden on the minority. He was dismayed and angry at what Mitch McConnell did to distort the rules. He shouted, shame, shame, at the Republicans on the floor when they forced him from his deathbed to make the 60th vote.
I remember that.
And he adds, Byrd, I am convinced, having known him and talked to him many times over decades about the Senate and its rules, would not stand for the way Republicans have misused the rules, especially to undermine democracy. He would support switching from 60 to end debate to 41 to continue it. That's a novel idea. From 60 to end debate to 41 to continue it. That is real live, no kidding, burden shifting.
Well, it's like I was saying before. Let's simply go back to the talking filibuster where you've got to stand there and rant until you pee. You know? It ultimately protects everybody. Not the majority, not the minority, but everybody. Because what isn't the Senate supposed to be the greatest deliberative body on the planet? Well, if nobody's deliberating and debating and considering and weighing and judging and letting the public know that they're up to serious business, they're going to have to scratch out that motto. You know, it'd be like taking the golden arches away from McDonald's and showing, you know, clogged up arteries above the restaurant. There you go. There's
Right,
place.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have called, because all I do is get myself worked up to a level.
Well, you get yourself worked up, but we have a damn fine time along the way.
Well, I will be the first to agree with that. I will be the first to agree. I just, you know, and I watch this stuff on TV. That's why I don't, I'm very selective in my news viewing, because a body can only take so much. Back when I was younger and more robust and could roll with the punches of reality, that was one thing. But, you know, once again, Trump changed everything. Any norms that were remaining hanging on by a thread, he attempted, to snip those little connections and toss them out the window. And we cannot have it. We just simply cannot put up with this horseshit. And you've got a group of mindless twerps. And I think I sent you the definition, a la Kurt Vonnegut, of what a twerp is. I'll repeat that later for those who weren't present. I work on an extra credit project.
Yes.
This is who are, and they want to be back in power? Are you, to quote John Bridwell, are you shitting me? Wrong?
I know. It's not to make you eat dirt and run rabbits.
I hear the helicopter above. I catch my rides here. Somebody's been listening. Agent Fred, did you hit the button? Oh, no. It's my get-out-of-jail-free card. Quick, bake me a cake and put a file in it. My file. I want to see my file. I want to see my lawyer is what I want to see. But it's perilous times. Perilous times. And people are just sitting around like, oh, hell. It'll be all right. No, it won't be all right. The only way it'll be all right, or even a reasonable facsimile of all right, is if we focus, stay engaged, and act as if it matters. You know?
And it's an uphill climb. I got something here I want you to hear.
All right.
It comes from a committee hearing. Senate Bill 383, Assembly Bill 299 out of Wisconsin. And it's video via Wisconsin Eye, and they do good work.
Okay.
Public hearing, and it's a bill, 383-299, that will tell businesses in Wisconsin that they are forbidden by God to require proof of vaccination. You know, this is one of those, you know, this is not a man bites dog story. It's the rationale behind the bill, as evidenced by State Representative Trig Pronshinsky. Damn, I'm proud of myself. That was on a cold read, too. Trig Pronshinsky explains over the course of 26 long seconds, long hockey puck biting, chewing through the duct tape seconds, why there's no point for businesses to require proof of vaccination. Take a deep, deep breath, Scott. Really. Everybody else, too.
So you ask, what are we going to do to stop the spread of the pandemic? And, you know, if you can't see the virus, if you can't see anything, how are you going to do it? How can you stop it? How? You physically cannot see the virus. You don't know if it's in this room or it's outside or if it even exists right now in here. You have no clue. How are you going to stop that?
Now, that's why, I mean, I asked you earlier, do you happen to have your vodka, your melon liqueur, and your Gatorade and your swirly straw handy? Because, woo, I mean, it's snowy and cold outside here, and I'm halfway out the door to eat dirt. Okay, screw the dirt. I'll eat snow and run rabbits.
Well, it's nothing to be alarmed about. You can't see it.
If you can't see the virus, how can you stop it? You physically can't see the virus. Now, if we could see the virus, by God, we could take out our blue steel freedom protectors, and we could just blow that virus away. I mean,
me or you?
No, that's me. And I got no way to be able to add this call in. I'm gonna turn that off, and I'm gonna see if I can figure out how to add a
call.
Add a call here. They keep, you know, every time they change the damn interface, it screws up, or it screws me up at least. No, that ain't it. I'm sorry. Well, I hate this sometimes. Let me see. Dadgummit. Yeah, there's... See, Brother Deacon Ace has got it all nailed down. How in the hell can you breathe oxygen if you can't see it, damn it? You bunch of liberal cucks! I know. So... Yeah. Well, I'm screwing up all over the place, Scott. Let me roll along, and it's been a great conversation.
All right, Robin, and hang in there, America.
By the last papery thin little pieces of your fingernails down where you bit them to the cuticles.
Well, the it's a Zen thing. It's a cosmic thing. The only way out is through.
Yes, I've been living by that lately.
If we engage and stay committed and focused, we can get through this. It won't be easy. It won't be fun, but it's doable. But we got to do it.
Precisely.
It happen. All right. Take care.
Be good. Later.
You too.
See ya. Bye. Our buddy Scott, and let's see. Let's do these things. Hold on. Where are you? Dadgummit. Yeah, I know. See, we got Steve from Georgistan out there eating dirt and running rabbits. Okay, we'll try. Steve just said, where'd you go? There we are. Steve said, that's the, hold on here. Dadgummit, I hate him. Yeah, Steve from Georgistan said, if you can't see it, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I'm glad these fools never work with live wire electricity. I know. And see, that's one of the... a dear friend of mine posted saying, you know, say whatever you want about Joe Rogan, but you can't claim he's stupid. And I bit my tongue. It really hurts. But, you know, for me, no, he's not stupid. He's sharp enough to have hustled $1 million out of Spotify, but there's a big difference between a fool between being stupid and being a fool. That's as close as I can come to making any sense of the situation. Okay, well, all right. Let's and by the way. We got about 39 minutes left in the program, and we had $580 to go at the beginning of the program, and I regret to inform you all, we still have $580 to go. I don't like to talk about the gory details of why I get stressed out over bill paying, but please believe me when I tell you, I'm really stressed out. And it would be great if we could just keep up with it. I'm so sorry to even talk about it. I hate talking about it. It galls me. I wish there was some way that I was just independently wealthy enough to just do this and to hell with it. But I'm not a Republican. Not a maggot. Not a limousine liberal. If we want this, we have to support it. And if you, well, I don't do video here, but if you could see the studio around me, you'd see that this ain't exactly the lap of luxury. Nor will it ever be. So, any help is great help. Before I go over to the phones, Robert in Australia said, a viewing suggestion, if no one else has made it, don't look up. I started telling people about that a couple of weeks ago. Blew my mind. The plot, a comet will impact Earth and destroy all life if not diverted. The film is about everything else. The government decides to wait and assess before they do anything. You can't be sure it'll hit us. We are, 100%. We're all going to die unless we act now. Yeah, we'll wait and assess. Definitely worth a look, Robert says. I couldn't agree more. And in fact, the way that I was thinking about Don't Look Up when I was reading the senatorial and Washington Inside the Beltway press response to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, because the people that this thing is that this film savages are the same people who are saying, oh, yeah, I don't see what the big deal is about that film. It doesn't seem like such a great film. Daggone, it's just a damn movie. And thank you to Ralphs for jumping in and getting us started this evening. Thank you, Ralphs, so much. So we are down to 5:55. Thank you. Thank you so very much indeed. It means so much, your ongoing and consistent and significant support of the program. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. Let's run over and check in with Dave in the blind. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Robin.
I'm sorry it took so long.
It's okay. With Scott, I already understand. I need to make dinner reservations and flight plans before I can get on. So I did all that. I now know why Joe Manchin is irritating so many people.
I figured it out. Wait, the light just went on?
Well, now this is a little unconventional, so follow along.
Okay, at Monty Hall, I want to play.
As we know, Satan is answering prayers because Addison McConnell is praying for Joe Manchin daily. So the thing is, it's Joe Manchin's voice that irritates Americans so much, because he reminds me in more ways than one of the late mediocre gospel star Ernest Angley. With that sticky, sweet, trans voice. And I am of the opinion that it's Addison, that he and Addison are closer friends than they want to let on.
Well, I mean, the Moscow Mitch has pulled some shitties on Joe. And so I don't know how near and dear they are.
Well, here's the problem with that. We all know what an attention gatherer Joe Manchin is. He loves attention. Loves, as long as he's getting his belly rubbed, he's fine. As long as he's getting paid to get his belly rubbed, he's even better. This is not a man to be trusted. How in the hell? And you've been around West Virginia a lot longer than anybody I know. How in the hell does the Democratic Party of West Virginia fall to a guy like Joe Manchin?
How?
How?
David, it was not a boating accident, okay? He spent a lot of time. First of all, the Manchins have been a politically powerful family for a very long time, okay? It was like 1968 or so when the Manchins, and of course, Joe was just like a little football player then or something, but when the Manchins teamed up with the Moore family to hand the governor's office to Republicans. And then in 1996, Joe did the same thing with Cecil Underwood to keep a progressive Democrat out of the governor's mansion, Charlotte Pritt, who had not at that point in time gone around the bend. I love her, but just, wow. And he, having stymied her, began to build his power base and bide his time. And after Cecil Underwood was done in 2000, we got Bob Wise for 4 years, and by then Joe was ready. And he brought in a team of players who utterly devastated the Democratic Party of West Virginia. And during the time that Joe Manchin has wielded power over the state of West Virginia, the Democratic Party in West Virginia went from controlling every office of what we call the Board of Public Works, the most significant elected offices in the state, governor, agriculture commissioner, secretary of state, attorney general, Supreme Court, to controlling none of them. Because the West Virginia Democratic Party went from being a vital and viable organization to being a cult of personality for Joe Manchin. That's why I've taken to referring to my state as West by Coal Manchinia. Does that make sense?
I was wondering why it happened, because when I was a kid, West Virginia had one of the strongest state Democratic parties in the country.
Yes, we did. We absolutely did, and it had been carefully and painstakingly built through a coalition of largely labor organizations, with the centerpiece being the United Mine Workers of America. But the United Mine Workers began being shivved with various strikes, the Pittston strike, and then came Don Blankenship and Massey Energy, and then the United Mine Workers decided to buy in on the idea of mountaintop removal, which takes a hell of a lot less workers than underground mining does, and they became self-defeating and became a shadow of their former selves. It is grievous to me. It's heartbreaking. I am the granddaughter. I am the daughter, the granddaughter, and the great granddaughter of union coal miners. And I was raised on the idea of union. And to see what has and the only thing Joe Manchin promises labor is that he'll let them sit at the table, but that doesn't mean they get to eat. And during the pendency of Joe Manchin's power in West Virginia, we have seen, for instance, right to work imposed upon us, you know, right to work for less, right to starve, whatever you want to call it. We have seen prevailing wage taken away. You know, that's and under the flimsiest of sham pretenses. We've seen. I mean, it has been a concerted effort. This is not to say it's all Joe Manchin's doing, but the problem is that it's hard for any other Democrat to live in Joe Manchin's world, because you have to sign on with Joe Manchin or else you are persona non grata. And once you get on his shit list, you stay on his shit list.
The art of vendetta.
So, I mean, does that answer your question? It's a brief précis.
Yeah, now the question becomes, I know they're out there because you exist, but how the hell do you
fight back against something like that. Because what we've got here,
well, there are those of us who are trying. I mean, if I can scrounge up the filing fee, I'm going to file and run for state legislature, and we'll see how.
Well, I hope you do, Robin.
Well,
I hope you do.
I want
Christine
to.
Christine does too.
I want to. But it all just kind of.
People are going to have to get their voices out there to know that there are other West Virginians, other than Joe Manchin, who have other opinions.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree, Dave.
The thing is, in Indiana, West Virginia is like Indiana, but Indiana's been like this for generations.
Yeah, we were one of those states. We were one of those states that had to be taken down. And you have to remember that the beginning of the end comes in 2000. In 1996, West Virginians happily went to the polls and voted eagerly for Bill Clinton's second term. And yet, by 2000, after a four-year onslaught, and I told you what he did, what Manchin did with the governor's race back then. But by the year 2000, you've got George W. Bush running here, and they're bringing and they're sending out mailers that show a knife through a Bible, saying that, you know, Al Gore's going to get your Bible and your mama's Bible and your mama, and they only sent it to two states, Arkansas and West Virginia, and then as stupid as it might seem. The National Ruble Association, I mean Rifle Association, managed to drag Charlton Heston to what was then the Raleigh County Armory in Beckley, where he stumped on behalf of George W. and hollered, "You can have my guns when you pry them from my cold dead fingers, or get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape," or, you know, whatever that old fool was babbling. And Lord, West Virginia just done ate it up, and it only matters because we had at the time five little electoral votes, Dave. But if West Virginia, and I know people have heard me say this before, they're sick of it. It's okay, we'll live with it. If West Virginia had done what West Virginia had done in the past and given our five little electoral votes to Al Gore like we'd given them to twice to Bill Clinton, Florida in 2000 would not have mattered. It would have been sufficient. Losing Florida, losing Tennessee, wouldn't matter. Our five votes would have been sufficient for him to become the president of the United States. And there would have been no Bush versus Gore. These are just facts.
And that was the beginning of the end.
And now... Yeah, that's all. And among other things, you know, it's not just that the Republicans control the two branches of state government. I mean, they're the two houses of the state legislature, I should say. They have super majorities. In other words, they are a law unto themselves. So whatever mean, pig-eyed, stupid, hateful pieces of garbage they decide to put forward, they pass. And even if Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice says, "Now, in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I signing this bill into law. I'm going to veto this." When he vetoes it, it doesn't matter because all it takes is a simple majority here to override a veto.
You don't need a two-thirds to override. You just need that.
A lot of states are that way. All it takes to override a gubernatorial veto is a simple majority, not a two-thirds like in Congress.
Yeah.
It's maddening.
I told you the story about 6 years ago, I voted absentee.
Right.
I get a letter from the
I get a letter from the Indiana State Election Board demanding my personal information be filled out and sent back into them, not in an enclosed mailer, but on a postcard. Well, I'm not about to give my personally identifying information on a postcard. They said, well, you'll be removed from the rolls. I said, who's challenging my ballot? Well, nobody's challenging your ballot. Everybody has to fill this out. I said, really? Let me call you back in a minute. I hung up. I called Christine. I said, did you get one of these? She said, no. I called the lady back, and I called her a liar. I said, now tell me, who is challenging my ballot? She still wouldn't give me the information, which by law, they're required to do, so that I can present my side of it. Because I was going to ask for a formal hearing.
Sure.
If you're going to take away my right to vote, you're going to do it to my face. They did not remove me from the voter rolls. As a matter of fact, I kept checking with the Republican clerk of the Republican county clerk. And no, Mr. Shaw, you're still on the books. Your vote is still valid. I said thank you and went on and I went into their office and voted early like I normally do. But this voter suppression has been going on for decades. It's been quiet. And they've been going after the disabled and the elderly because we don't tend to fight back. Because, A, we don't have the money to.
Yeah, you don't, and you are insufficiently powerful and wealthy.
And this is my criticism of the Democrats in Indiana. They don't reach out to the disabled community and activate them. There are a bunch of us who will raise Cain, figuratively and literally, if need be. But they will not reach out to the disabled in Indiana and say, okay, how can we get you to the polls so you can give us your opinion, which is all an election is. The thing of it is, I got so depressed over the last few days since I've been ill. Honest to God, Robin, I don't know why I'm still alive.
Oh, no.
And I am not the kind of person. I attempted suicide back in 2012. I survived, obviously. We're having this conversation. But I was not, at that time, I was not as deeply depressed as I was a few days ago. And I thought to myself, this has got to be an effect of the COVID. So I asked my therapist this morning, I said, is it possible that that's been exacerbating my depression? Because I told him what was going on. He said, it's very possible that it's exacerbating your depression. So knowing that, I now know that if I get that deep in the weeds again, I'm calling an ambulance. I don't give a damn. If I'm positive, I'm trying to isolate myself from everybody to keep everybody else safe.
It's the responsible thing.
You know, And I have always felt that political participation is a right, not a privilege, and therefore should be universal for U.S. citizens to vote in their election. Vermont allows their prisoners to vote. They take the enlightened view that eventually most of these people are going to get out. And I would think that Republicans would be doing cartwheels and handstands for this, because they have a built-in white supremacist group in the prison population that they can count on day in and day out to Sieg Heil whoever they decide to goose step in front of the public.
There we go.
You know, so but I'm getting grief from the boys down at the shop. With me being sick and all, they want to automate the plant.
Oh, don't they always? You take a few days off.
Well,
next thing you know, you got a revolution of the proletariat, and there you go.
Well, see, the problem is, I always took pride in the fact that we handcrafted our crosses. These aren't flimsy fly-by-night crosses.
Yeah, and
cheap
pressboard, paperboard, you know, balsa. God, no. Who wants that?
These aren't made in Pakistan and shipped back, you know. No.
Yeah, they're not. No. The handmade crosses from Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium are all they're not labeled. Designed in the United States. By God, they're made right here.
That's right. Probably American made, and we're a union shell. So,
now that would be the Amalgamated Cross Bracers, wouldn't it?
Well, that but
would that be the International Association of Crucifixers?
No, it would be the International Crucifixion and Martyrdom Services Union. We have professional standards, testing, and all of that. How to most comfortably position your victimized client on the cross so that their crucifixion can be extended to an appropriate level. And it's to the point now where our shipping department, our loading dock, there's more than one union. We've got Teamsters working down there on the loading dock, and those crosses have got to come in and out just as quick. And we can't be holding that line up.
No, it's work to be done.
Those boys, that's right. But you know, we all, and they're like, but boss, you don't have a problem with the union? No, I'm guaranteed a professionally trained, craftspeople who know their job. And that takes out a lot of headache on my part, as well as a lot of liability, because we have a program in place for workplace safety and things like that. You know, now I am more than willing to allow, and I use the title lightly, Justice Gorsuch to come over to my house for lunch. Preferably right now while I'm positive. He doesn't have to wear a mask. I'm not going to ask that. And because I know it's his firmly held religious belief although I didn't get the memo from the Vatican that was the thing. I thought Bishop Frank had said that it was the responsibility of all good Christians to help prevent this spread. But I might be mishearing him on the news.
Sometimes it gets lost in translation.
True, but I have to take issue with you.
Yes?
You said that the Catholic Church mispronounces Latin. Well, I have news for you.
Yes?
It's not a mispronunciation. The difference between classical Latin, which you studied in college.
Oh, yes.
And vulgar Latin. And liturgical Latin is that liturgical Latin has more Roman pronunciation. It's a dialect.
Oh, I thought it was like the difference between classical Homeric Greek and Koine Greek.
No, it's more of a dialect.
It's kind of like the difference. Like Homeric Greek versus Koine Greek is proper broadcast standard Greek versus street Greek. And vulgar Latin is street Latin.
Right. Well, and the thing is, you want to really twist your mind up. Archaeologists have found a form of pig Latin in Roman ruins.
Really?
Where they switch letters around. Yeah, where they switch letters to the end and make the pronunciation.
Ixnay on the Icar, okay?
Yes, that sort of thing, you know. My parents used to use pig Latin when we were small because we could never understand it. And we would try to imitate them, which was the funniest thing in the world. Looking back on it. But my parents would have full conversations in pig Latin.
Gotta be quick.
While we were in the car, yeah. Yeah. We'd go to the A&W root beer stand or whatever. I might have been all of 5 or 6 years old when those little mugs were huge.
Weren't they just?
We found some in my mom's garage after she died. And they're tiny. They're so tiny, but I remember when I was a kid.
You remember them being gargantuan.
Oh, yes. Yes, ma'am, I did. Oh. And my sister said, "Do you want one of these?" And I said, "Yes." And it's in storage right now. Christine's got it in storage for me. And my sister-in-law wanted to throw all my stuff out of there.
Well, you know, while I was down in Alabama, one thing I made sure that I did do, Dave, is I made a root beer float with Bluebell homemade vanilla ice cream.
I love Bluebell.
Except no substitutes. Oh, my God.
We've got Bluebell here in Indiana.
Don't you tell me that.
Well, I got to give you a reason to come visit Chris and I, don't I?
Well, I think you just did. I mean, you know, I love you anyway, but...
I don't know.
I wonder if I bought one of those little freezers that you can plug into the outlet in your vehicle, could I keep some Bluebell frozen from Taliban, Indiana to West by Coal Man Chenya?
Well, see, now the thing is, though, Robin, the Bluebell I know I can get is out of those little dispensers you see at the Wally World, you know, with the vacuum comes up, reaches down in the back, vacuums it up, and then drops it. I have not seen Bluebell in package form in Indiana.
Oh.
But we can get the little sandwich thing.
Well, I actually wrote to him and I said, please. And they said, well, we don't have any plans to expand into West Virginia, but if we do, we'll keep you in mind. And meanwhile, though, you can get it by sending us $135 and we'll send you 4 half gallons. packed on dry ice overnight. I mean, I understand that. I understand the cost. It's just not sustainable right now.
Well, you know, when your rich uncle gets out of the poorhouse, maybe you could afford something like that.
God, one never knows. I mean, but then it becomes a question of what flavors, you know, and on their list you cannot get the sherbet. I discovered the sherbet while I was down there. Holy cow, it's fantastic too, because I took a Grapeco, and with the rainbow sherbet, which is orange and lime and strawberry, scoop that. And yep. By the way, here's the trick. This is the trick to a proper float. Whatever soda you're using, you have to pour in a little bit in the bottom before the ice cream goes in. Because if you just pour the pop on top of the ice cream, it's going to foam up so hard that you'll never get any pop on it. So you put a little bit of soda in the bottom, put the ice cream in, and then pour the soda on top. And I made a, they called those a freeze. I made a sherbet freeze with grape soda and bluebell rainbow sherbet. And then the classic root beer float with the homemade vanilla and just, you know, A&W. It's just what I could get. And I'm sitting here just making myself miserable talking about it. But I don't want to sell any of the other flavors short. The butter pecan, the black walnut, oh my God, and then the Dutch chocolate is the most exquisite chocolate ice cream I've ever eaten. But that homemade vanilla, just that flavor, oh my, just hard to pull me away. And I was so spoiled because
they use vanilla.
Yeah, I think they do, but I was so spoiled. You know, I would just, you know, I wasn't moving around real good, and I wasn't, and Annette wouldn't let me go out the door because she was afraid I'd slip, fall. You know, she's a good nurse. And so I'd just kind of do laps through the apartment, and every now and then I'd stop at the fridge and pull out the bluebell and just get me a spoon and go to work on it, put it back, keep walking. Oh.
2-3 laps around the apartment, and then you're opening the refrigerator door. Robin, you could get your freshman 15 doing that.
Well, the freshman 15. Oh dear. Yeah, we got to worry about that. Hey, Dave, I got to roll, my friend, because we're at the end of the program somehow. I don't know how that happened, but it does.
You got talking about food porn. That's how it happened.
Yeah, the time flies when that happens. Please tell Christine we love her dearly.
And she sends her love to you too. So I'll tell her.
And tell the boys down at the shop not to get all highfalutin. Handcrafted is where it's at. We don't want to outsource.
I have to explain to them that that's where most of their profit sharing comes from. I can charge a boatload for the handcrafted stuff.
Exactly. So, Dave, you take care, my friend.
All right.
Bye now.
Take care, Robin.
Our buddy Dave in the calling from the blind in Taliban, Indiana. And so we are at the end of the program. I have tremendous thanks to offer up. Thank you so much. We just took a big bite out of the fundraising goal. Thank you to George. Ralph's had previously gotten us down to 555. George got us down to 530. And then our buddy Harold, the president and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, got us down to 230. $230 just to go. And so that's awesome. Thank you so much, Harold. I cannot thank you enough. And so with that in mind, Brother Deacon Asa asked, can we find someone out there to match a Brother Deacon's lowly $20 if you can't see it, how you going to spend it challenge? I hope we can, because that would get us down to $190, making tomorrow only $390 to get fully caught up on prayer meeting Wednesday. We might have might pull the deacons in for a live in the cathedral service. I don't know. But thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, and hopefully somebody will jump in on that, and I'll get to pay in a little bit more, make sure this all stays on the air. Thank you so much, everybody. Thanks to each and every one of you who keep the program going. Liberal, progressive, independent radio could not exist without you. we are short several limousine liberals on this, but, you know, somehow or another, we managed to keep this going. Thank you. With your kind, kind gift. No, no, no. Don't challenge my ciphering on this. 190. Yeah, 490. Sorry, 490, not 390. Ciphering, says Brother Deacon Asa. 490. Thank you. You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. So tomorrow will be 490 if Brother Deacon's, if you can't see it, how you going to spend it challenge gets met. I think I'm going to be leaving here in a minute and going out on the frozen roads to see if I can find a bottle of freaking propane somewhere. It seems to be another one of those things in short supply. Yeah, Ralph says, wow for Harold, indeed. Let's all give Harold a round of applause and a cowbell. And I still giggle over Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. But thanks to all of you who keep this on the air. Thank you to our Patreon subscribers, our PayPal subscribers. And, hey, we always need subscribers. If you want to just jump in for $10 or something, $5, whatever, do it at Patreon. The interface for that is under the Contribute tab at headon.live. The PayPal interface is right there. It'd be great to just wake up and see it. Flurry of new subscribers. It would be wonderful. And thank you to our a la carte contributors. I'm worried about folks like Albert and our dear friend Charlene in Rhode Island, because I saw today that they're like high on the list for increases in cases. Please stay safe, y'all. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Hope somebody meets your challenge. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Now a union shop, of which we are very proud. And please, call your member of the House of Representatives. Ask him to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. It means the world to Appalachia. It is the key to Appalachia's future. It is the heart of grassroots advocacy around mountaintop removal. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine, get your boosters, get your KN95 masks. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, take some with you everywhere you go, maintain your social distance. Remember, Paul from Parts Unknown says 15 to 20 feet, 6 feet, don't cut it. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes a-burbling up towards you saying, I'm a Supreme Court Justice, I ain't got to wear no mask, I'm above the law. Well, avoid Ann's boy Neil, because the apple falleth not far from the tree, and neither does the fruit of the poison tree fall far from the tree itself. Avoid them like the plague, because he is. Later.